your one host, host one.
Thank you.
Have you got a question? This is how you read.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So first, I want to thank everybody for accommodating the schedule change. We normally have this shear on Wednesday nights, and we're switching it to Monday night. For those in the Monday night shear, thank you very much for accommodating the switch from Wednesday night to Monday night. A little bit on the pre-Pesach Shabbos. So I want to focus a little bit on an interesting part of the Haggadah, which the truth is we're going to use perhaps one or two sections of the Haggadah to really springboard into a much more general discussion about the Haggadah and the goal of the Seder night. If you take a look at number one, so we have over here the Manishtana. So interestingly enough, not our we could give a whole share on Manishtana, but we're not going to. Again, the Manishtana itself has evolved very much over the years. The Rambam, Maimonides, has a version of the Haggadah. And if one studies the Rambam's version of the Haggadah, one will notice that the four questions that were asked during the times of the Beis HaMikdash are very different than the four questions that are asked today. For the simple reason that two out of the four questions asked during the times of the Beis HaMikdash were focused on the Karban Pesach, or focused on the Paschal Lamb, and elements of temple service. Whereas the Manishtana that we have today is the Manishtana that was really adopted in the aftermath of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And we ask four basic questions. So Manishtana Halayla Zemikal Halaylos. Question number one is we ask on every single night, we eat chametz and matzah, tonight only matzah. Question number two, on all other nights, we eat all kinds of vegetables. Tonight, there's an emphasis on maror. Question number three, on all nights, we dip twice. We don't even dip once. Tonight, we dip twice. And the fourth question, on every other night, we eat in any position we want. We want to eat sitting. We want to eat laying down. We want to eat reclining. That's up to us. But tonight, all of us eat reclining. Okay. In the immediate aftermath of Manishtana, we come to number two. So remember again, the Manishtana again, you know, the koteret, the heading of Manishtana is Kan Haben Shoel Esaviv. Here the child asks, literally the son asks his father, the child asks the parent these questions, and then we would assume that the paragraph that follows immediately afterwards would be an answer to these particular questions. But yet if you look at number two, we recite in the Haggadah, Avodim Hayinu LePharaoh B'Mitzrayim. We were servants to Pharaoh in Egypt. God took us out of there with a strong hand, an outstretched arm, or a strong arm and outstretched hand. And if God would not have taken our ancestors out of Egypt, we and our children would still be enslaved to Pharaoh in Egypt. And even if we're old, and even if we're wise, and if we know the entire Torah, nevertheless, there is a mitzvah, there is an obligation upon us to recite and to recall the Exodus story. And whoever spends a significant amount of time recalling the events of the Exodus, such an individual is praiseworthy. What's the problem? It doesn't answer the questions. Right here, again, the child asked four legitimate questions, all rooted in the activities and the events of the Seder. Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? And we seem to go ahead. Avodah Mayinu is a very interesting paragraph, which essentially says we were slaves, we were emancipated. Had God not emancipated us, we would still be slaves to this very day. Very nice. But we have not answered any of the four questions. So the question we have to try to understand is, obviously, this paragraph is not here haphazardly. Somehow this paragraph is related to the four questions of Manishtana. How does Avadim Hayinu answer the child's four questions? So in order to answer that question, meaning in order to understand the connection between Avadim Hayinu and the Manishtana, we have to go on a little bit of a detour. Take a look at number three. The Mishnah writes, this is the Mishnah in the 10th chapter of Pesachim, Arei Pesachim. Mazgulo kol sheni. They would pour the second glass of wine. This is at the Seder. The kan haben shol aviv. And here the son would ask his father, Manishtana. V'im ein das b'ben aviv malamdo manishtana halayla zmi kol leilos. And even if the child does not ask on his own, We prompt the child to ask. We teach the children to ask. And then the Mishnah says something very interesting. Maschil biginus umisayim b'shabach. The Mishnah says that, you know, it's interesting. When you look through the Haggadah, the truth is, if you imagine for a moment you're looking at it for the first time, what's going to strike you first thing? You'll try it at the Seder. There doesn't seem to be an order. Right? When you look at the Haggadah looks very hodgepodge. Right? We go Kiddush, then we're breaking matzos, then we're eating vegetables, we're washing hands, we're going ahead, we're moving the Seder plate off, putting the Seder plate on, Manishtana, Avadim Hayinu, quotations from the Gemara, from the Torah, the section of Bikurim, the first fruits is there, right? We're singing a little Dayinu, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, right? All these different stuff, and some stories. When you look at it at first glance, again, you know, very often the greatest challenge we have is things that we've done for many years. We were not able to take a step back and almost look at the panoramic view. But you'll try to go home tonight. You look at the Haggadah. Pretend for a moment you're showing up to the Pesach Seder for the first time. And the first thing you say to yourself is, whoever wrote this book must have had 4 cups of wine before. Right? Because, again, it doesn't seem to have any rhyme or reason. And the Gemara says, no. There actually is a very important, albeit nuanced, pattern and framework to the Haggadah. And what is it? It's comprised these 4 words. Maschil biginos. Literally, we begin. Ginos is a very strong word. Ginos means what? Shame, degradation, disparaging information. So we'll translate it like this. We begin with the low points. We begin, again, with the negative aspects of our national existence. Umisayim b'shevach. But we end off with incredible praise. So we begin with ginus, we begin with those things that are less than praiseworthy, less than honorable, and we go ahead and we end up with shevach, with those very wonderful things. So the Gemara says, what does this mean? Number 4, the Gemara explains, maschil b'ginus m'sayim b'shevach. What does this mean that we begin the Pesach Seder with ginus, with the shameful, disparaging, low points of the Jewish experience? Rav Amar, Rav says, Mitchila ovdei gilul avodas gilul mahayu avasein. Rav says, you know what we make reference to? We make reference to the fact that we hail from idolaters. And we'll discuss what that means in just a little bit. But we begin the Seder by saying, Mitchila ovdei avodazara hayu avasein. In the beginning, our ancestors were idolaters. That's the maschil beginus. We begin with the fact that, again, the truth is we do have some skeletons in the closet. We do not, you know, we have wonderful yichos. But if you take our yichos all the way back, you will see that we are descended from idolaters. Umisayim b'shemach, but we end on a high note. What's the high note? The achshav kervanu hamakum lefanov. But now HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God brought us close. Now we fear God. Now we worship God. Now we are the chosen nation. So that's Rav's opinion. Shmuel says, avadim hayinu. Shmuel says, maschil b'ginus, to begin with the shameful or degradation means what? That we were slaves. We were slaves. It's not easy to admit that we were slaves. It's not easy to admit that we were someone else's property. We were avadim hayinu. We were slaves. And now that's maschil b'ginus. We begin again with the degradation. Umesayim b'shevach. And we end with the praise, because we highlight what? That although we were once slaves, now in fact we are free people, free men. So again, so what you see over here from the Gemara is, and this is interesting because you could go back in your Haggadah, you could see how this pattern plays out, but that is the pattern of the Pesach Seder. Maschil beginus, we begin with the low points, umisayim b'shevach. We end again on the high points of the Jewish experience. A machlokis, a dispute between Rav and Shmuel as to what low point we are focusing on. According to Rav, again, we're focusing on the fact, mitchila ovdei avodazara, how we were idolaters, that's the low point. High point is now we're monotheists, now we believe in God, now we have the Torah. According to Shmuel, we begin by stating we were once slaves, that's the gnos, that's the shameful, the degradation, and misayim b'shevach, we end with praise, but now we are free people. In fact, if you look at number 5, you will notice that we, in fact, adopt both opinions. We actually include both of these sections in the Haggadah. We begin the Maggid section with Avadim Hayinu Lepara B'Mitzrayim, which again is Shmuel's opinion. We begin the Pesach Seder not by talking about freedom. We don't begin by saying that now we're free people. We don't say that we're a nation of kings. We don't say that we're the children. What do we say? We begin by saying we were slaves. We begin at a low point, and then we work ourselves up over the course of the Seder to ultimately embrace our newfound freedom. And again, just 2 paragraphs after Avadim Hayinu, what do we say? Metchila ov de avodah zara hayu avoseinu. In the beginning, we were idolaters. Va'achshav kervanu hamakom la'avodah zara. But now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taken us out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has redeemed us spiritually, and now we have come close to serving God. What's the nature of the dispute between Rav and Shmuel? I mean, obviously, Rav and Shmuel are arguing as to what constitutes genus. What is the degradation? What is the shame of the Jewish people? What are they arguing about? Take a look at number six. Rabbi Lau, in his commentary on the Haggadah, says so beautifully. He says, Mahin hagnus v'hashevach. What is this idea of genus and shevach? What does this mean, the disparaging and the praise? Nechleku b'kach, Rabbi Shmuel b'gimara. So Rabbi Shmuel disagrees, and in the first paragraph, he quotes the Gemara. According to Rab, we should make mention of the fact that we were idolaters, and now we serve God. According to Shmuel, we should make reference to the fact that we were slaves, and now we're free. Look at the second paragraph. Kilomar, Rav Sober, Sheyesh lahadgish es hatzad hatorani, Shemetchila hayu avosinu ov de avodah zarah, hu kineged zeh kirvanu hamakom la'avodaso, v'ilu Shmuel Sober, Sheyesh lahadgish es hatzad ha'enoshi, Shemetchila hayinu avodim l'mitzrayim, so says Rabbi Lau, such a fascinating way. What are Rav and Shmuel really arguing about? They're arguing about what is the focus of Pesach, or specifically, what is the focus of the Seder? According to Rav, the focus of the Seder is spiritual redemption. That is the focus of the Seder. We were idolaters, and remember again, we were idolaters even in Egypt, right? Remember, in Egypt, we were salvaged by God. Why? Because had HaKadosh Baruch Hu not intervened at that moment, we would have been lost. So we weren't redeemed because of our piety. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't extract us from the bonds of servitude because we were tzaddikim, because we were righteous. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as the Medrash says, we were on the 49th level of Tumah. We were this close to just falling into the abyss of impurity and being lost forever. So therefore, says Rab, the real emphasis of the Seder night is spiritual redemption. We were idolaters, and because of God's intervention, He allowed us to ultimately again start again, rehabilitate ourselves spiritually, and become the nation of God. According to Shmuel, no, the focus is not spiritual redemption. The focus is what? The focus is physical redemption. Physical redemption. We focus on the fact, avodim hayinu l'pram Mitzrayim, we were slaves. We were slaves, we were in physical bondage. And what we celebrate on Pesach is what? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu extricated us from those circumstances and ultimately brought us out. Just as an aside, it's interesting to see that on a deeper level, what Rav and Shmuel are really arguing about is, what do you need? What are the basic necessities that man has in order to be whole? In order to be whole. According to Rav, in order to be a whole individual, all you need is your ruchnius. It doesn't matter what your physical realities are. If your soul is intact, if your spirituality is intact, you have the ability to be a whole person despite difficult or sometimes compromised circumstances. Shmuel says, no. Shmuel says what? Without a free body, if my physical material needs are not met, it is very difficult to be a spiritual individual. If I am a slave and my physical circumstances are compromised, it's very difficult to feel holy when I'm struggling again with my physicality. So just a fascinating, and interestingly enough, what we do in the Haggadah is we don't really take a side. Because what do we in essence do? What do? We take both. Now, I will point out that remember, although we include both, we do put one before the other. What do we focus on? Right? Avadim Hayinu. So at the end of the day, we seem to place Shmuel above Rav. That at the end of the day, the primary focus seems to be the fact that we were physical slaves and God extricated us from the circumstances of our servitude. But then we add in also that there was an element of spiritual redemption on Pesach as well. Mitchila ov de avodazar ha'avasinu, we were idolaters. Va'achshav kervanu hamakom la'avodaso. And now God brought us close to His service. So this is the fundamental dispute between Rav and Shmuel. So now, leaving aside the dispute, Rav and Shmuel, although they disagree on the details, avodim hayinu, mitchila ov de avodah zarah, are we focusing on physical redemption? Are we focusing on spiritual redemption? Everyone agrees with the framework. And the framework is, remember this phrase, four words, maschil beginus, Umesayim b'shevach. We begin the Seder with the degradation, with the shame, with the low points of the Jewish people, both spiritual and physical. And over the course of the Seder, our goal is to do what? Our goal is to build up to the Shevach. Our goal is to build up to the beautiful praise, to the beautiful accomplishments, to spiritual and physical emancipation. The question that I'd like to explore for a little bit tonight is why? Why is that the adopted model for the Seder night? Why does it have to follow that approach of starting low and working your way higher? And you'll see, by the way, that this is really, once you know this concept, all of those disparate parts of the Haggadah that we said don't seem to flow all fit in so beautifully. Every single part of the Haggadah fits into one of two categories. Either it's Gnus, it represents the low point of Jewish history, or the low point of Jewish experience, both spiritually and physically, or it represents Shevach, or it represents the praise of the Jewish people for the newfound status of spiritual and physical freedom that we've accomplished. But why? Why does that have to be the model for the Leil HaSeder? So I want to share with you a couple of different approaches to this particular question. Take a look at number 7. So the Marasha says a beautiful idea. The Marasha writes, Maschil beginus misayim b'shevach. Why do we have to begin with the low points and work our way up? Why begin with the disparaging, shameful pieces and work our way up to the praise of the people? And you know, what's the idea? Shebiyom simchas libo shel adam. On a day when a person is very joyous, yiskar tchilas shifluso uginuso. On the day when a person is very happy, on a day that a person is very proud of themselves, a person should also remember literally their lowliness and ginuso, the disparaging parts of their persona. Why? Shelo tazuach da'ato alav. In order that a person not get carried away. Or in other words, says the Marsha, and we have this concept built into halacha, that on a day when a person is in a very celebratory mood, and especially if it's a celebratory mood over an accomplishment, a person has to be very careful that that accomplishment does not go to one's head, and that one does not get carried away, one does not engage in an egocentric celebration. That's why, interestingly enough, you know that we break a glass under a chuppah. Now, everyone associates that practice with the Churban, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but the truth is, that practice predated the destruction of the temple. That practice was even done during the days of the temple itself. In fact, the original source of that practice was that the rabbis used to break an expensive glass in order to temper the joy at a wedding, that people should not get carried away, because excessive simcha, to me, there's a very fine line between being lebedik, you know, between being lively and wonderful and being stupid, to put it bluntly, right? There's a very fine line. And so the rabbis felt that, again, when it comes to simcha, when it comes to celebration, celebration must always be cloaked and enveloped in holiness. And if simcha, if celebration is left unchecked, it goes from simcha and becomes silliness. So says the Marasha, this is the paradigm. Every single time we celebrate something, every single time we celebrate some type of accomplishment, there's always like a check. There's a self-check in there to prevent the simcha from becoming inappropriate. Says the Marasha, Umehai taima, Dorish nami me arami obedavi. Therefore, says the Marasha, that's why we include the Gnus. On the Leil HaSeder, we include the disparaging parts of our beginnings. We include the fact that we were slaves. We include the fact that we were idolaters. Va'alkin bo'i ladu'i la'shvuchei tvei. So says the Marasha something amazing. What could happen on the night of the Seder? You know, here I am, I'm drinking my wine. I'm leaning on my pillow. You know, I'm going to eat all this wonderful food. I'm a king. So that newly found monarchical identity could easily go to one's head. So says the Marasha, the rabbis placed a self-check within the Seder. What's the self-check? By beginning the Seder, by discussing that we were idolaters, what it says is what? Don't get so carried away with yourself, because look at your beginnings. Yes, be proud of your accomplishments. Yes, be proud of who you are, but also at the same time, remain humble, because at the end of the day, your origins are humble. Interestingly enough, if you look at number 8, the Taz writes, Ela dinira de tam levisha sakito. Interestingly enough, some of the custom, and there are varying customs with this, of wearing a kittel at the Seder. So when I say different customs, is interesting. So some of the customs, only the person leading the Seder wears the kittel. In fact, in other communities, the custom was that everyone wore a kittel. When I say a kittel, what it means is just everybody wore like a white garment at the Seder. Why? Says the Taz something amazing. Shelo tazuach da'ato alav. This is done in order. Okay. This is done in order that one not get carried away with themselves. That one, God forbid, not lose themselves in the simcha. Al kein yilbash beged mesim. What is a kittel? What is a kittel? A kittel essentially is a burial shroud. Is it right? We bury people in their kittel. A kittel is a burial shroud. So it says that's so amazing. That what do we do on the night of the Seder? We put on a burial shroud. Why would I put on a bed? This might not be a good Dvar Torah for the night of the Seder. You might just want to keep this on your own, right? But what do we do? What do we do at the night? See, here we're celebrating our freedom. How do we temper our freedom to ensure that it does not go to our head? We put on a burial shroud as if to say, yes, I'm free. As if to say, yes, I'm a Ben Chorin. But at the end of the day, I want to make sure that my simcha, my celebration, remains in check. Just as an aside, this happens to be also an interesting idea that you know that the Davidic line, monarchy comes from Shevet Yehuda, but specifically monarchy comes from Peretz. Peretz is one of the children that Yehuda fathered with Tamar. So it's fascinating that monarchy comes from essentially a union between Yehuda and a woman he thought was a prostitute, right? Tamar was not his wife. So it's fascinating, you know, monarchy, if you look at general like worldly monarchies, monarchies always pride themselves on one thing, and that's what? Yes. Pedigree, right? It's all about yichus. And amazingly enough, the truth is, if you trace our monarchical pedigrees back to its origin, the truth is, it goes back to some stories that make us blush a little bit, right? It goes back to stories that, you know, we skip over as children when we're learning these things. We save it for when we're adults. So it's strange. So why? Why would monarchy come? And the truth is, again, we even have it by Rus also. David HaMelech comes from a Moabite convert. David HaMelech's greatest detractor said that he wasn't even Jewish because his grandmother, great-grandmother, wasn't Jewish. So the Maharal Prague explains that all of this was done to keep the monarchs humble. What's the best way to, because the king could very easily be prone to a sense of inflated ego, inflated self-worth. What's the best way to keep monarchy humble? Say, hey, king, before you get so arrogant, why don't you open up a Chumash Bereishis? Right? Let's learn a little bit about your Zayda and your Baba and exactly how they met, right? And what happened over here. And that story, because of that beginning, that keeps the kings rooted. Didn't always work, but it's supposed to keep the kings rooted and keep the kings humble. So according to this first approach, the Marshan has explained that this whole idea of maschil beginus u'mesayim v'sheva, this whole idea of beginning with the disparaging parts of our existence and ultimately ending on the high, we really place emphasis on the fact that we were idolaters. We place emphasis on the fact that we were slaves in order that our newfound freedom does not become a source of self-aggrandizement, does not become a source of inflated ego, and that we appreciate our newfound freedom, but at the same time, we do not get a swollen head over it. Take a look at number 9, a second approach. And again, all of this right now, we're just trying to understand the model of Maschil Beginos U'Mesayim B'Shavas. According to the Maharsha Taz, it keeps us rooted, it keeps us grounded, it keeps us humble. Says Rabbi Lau in number 9, a beautiful idea. The Mishnah Ne'emar, Ki mitzvas v'igarata lebincha na'asis v'ofen, shal Maschil Beginos U'Mesayim B'Shavas. So what Rabbi Lau says, what's the point of this model of beginning with the disparaging parts and working your way up to the praise? So this is such a profound idea. E'efshar lehistapek b'shevach below lisaper gam alaginus. Because you can't truly appreciate the praise unless, of course, you first spend some time dwelling on the degradation. Kefishan lokhim balayla hazet lo rak matzah ki emaror. The same way that on the night of Pesach, we don't just take matzah, which is the bread of freedom, bread of redemption, but what else do we do? We also take mar, the bitter herbs, which represents the difficulties of servitude. Mi she'eneno makir es hamaror, because whoever does not know the maror, lo yeyeda laharich es arka shel matzah, will not know how to appreciate the matzah. Umi shelo meivin mahu shibut, whoever doesn't know what servitude is, lo yodea mashmo usa shel chirus, will not fully understand, nor will he fully appreciate the idea of freedom. So explains about that. And in fact, before we explain that, look at number 10. The Malbim says the same idea. It's maschil beginos u'mesayim b'shemas mitchila. Mikan maschul etzma sipor. Vero abal ha'agada la'achil ha'sipor me'az mirish sitem nitzat samunos yisrael de Avram shikar esparo. We begin, so says the Malbim, we begin all the way back before Avram Avinu ever recognized God while we were still idolaters. Ulesaper kolin yoni galus mitzrayim u'ge'ulusa ad matan Torah. Skip down a little bit. Look at paragraph B. He says, Kirak az ye'olel ha'sipor pe'ulaso la'asos roshem belev. Because it's only says the Malbim, after you realize the beginnings, does the story have a real impact on you? The Malbim says, which is what Rabbi Lau was saying, is the only way we really appreciate things in life is how? Is through contrast. Contrast is what creates context. How do I appreciate freedom? Only if what? Only if I've experienced servitude. So again, how do I appreciate spiritual freedom? Only by recognizing mitchila ov de'avodah zarah hayu avoseinu. Once upon a time, we were idolaters. We were lost. We didn't know God. We didn't know anything. And I look how far I've come. So now when I realize where I was, I realize that I was an idolater. And now I realize where I am. That's amazing. Once upon a time in life, I was spiritually lost. Once upon a time in life, I was someone else's chattel. I was someone else's property. I was a slave. And now I'm free. Says Rabbi Lau, says the Malbim, that it's only through contrast that you could really appreciate the freedom of the evening. Remember, what is the goal of the Leila Seder? What is the goal of the Seder night? The goal is to feel free. That's the goal. Remember, I didn't put it on the sheet, but the mantra of the night of the Seder is Chayav Adam Liros is Atzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yatzam Mitzrayim. A person is obligated to view him or herself as if we have left Egypt. It's not enough just to simply remember a historical event. It's not enough just to remember a story that occurred 3,000 years ago. I have to feel it. If I'm supposed to feel it, says Rabbi Lau, says Mom, how do I feel it? I have to at least also relive the negative parts. I have to relive the low parts. I have to relive the shameful and disparaging parts. I have to relive what it meant to be an idolater and to be lost spiritually and theologically. I have to relive afadim hayinu, what it meant to be a slave. And only once I relive that in part, can I now once again resume, or can I now achieve the ability, can I now feel what it means to be free? It's only through contrast that you could truly appreciate the notion of freedom. I think this also teaches us something else. If we extend this a little bit, what Rabbi Lau and the Malbim are also teaching us, Maschil Beginus Messiah Meshavach also means, teaches us, the need for patience. We spoke about this actually in some of our past shiurim, that sometimes the greatest difficulty we have in life is we want answers and we want them now. We want clarity and we want it now. Something negative happens. I'm willing to believe that the negative event has some type of positive side to it, has some type of positive underpinning, but I want the explanation right here and now. And the truth is, life doesn't work that way. Maschil beginus u'misayim b'shevach. Life begins very often in a very difficult way, but we believe that it ends b'shevach. It ends well. It ends beautifully. It ends with praise. But what do you need between genus and shevach? What do you need? A lot of patience. You need to have patience in life to allow events to actualize. You need to have patience in life in order to see ultimately how things will pan out as time goes on. So these are really two parts of the same concept. Maschil b'genus mesayim b'shevach. It's only the contrast that creates a full appreciation. It's only the contrast that creates the appreciation for the present. And to take that a step further, we need to have patience. Ultimately, again, maschil b'genus u'mesayim b'shevach is a continuum. It's a life continuum. We begin with genus, we begin with difficulties, we begin with challenges, but as the continuum moves along, we see the continuum moves towards shevach, the continuum moves to some type of meaningful and beautiful resolution. But you have to have life staying power. You have to have patience to be able to see it through, because the answers come, the shevach comes, but you just have to be patient. I'll show you a third approach. So here, this is another beautiful idea, number 11. The Beis Halevi in his commentary, the Haggadah, says the following. He says, "Mitchila ov de'avodah zarah hayavaseinu." This is amazing. Mikan raya l'mashakasav harambam, Digam Avram Avinu Avad Mitchila Avodazara Ayin Sham. So interestingly enough, the Beis Halevi says, who is this referring to? Who is this referring to? Mitchila Ovde Avodazara Hayu Avsi. Our forefathers were idolaters. Who's the forefather we're talking about? So the Beis Halevi says, it's Avram Avinu. It's Avram Avinu. Now you know that there is a fundamental dispute between the Rambam and the Ravid. Remember, they are halachic antagonists. So the Rambam, Maimonides, says that Avram Avinu discovered God at the age of 40, which means what was Avram Avinu doing until the age of 40? Right? He was meditating. He was whatever he was doing. You know, he was worshiping a whole bunch of other gods, not HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was in a stage of spiritual exploration. The Ravid explains that Avram Avinu found God at the age of 3. Now, obviously, that age of 3 must be very different than what we reckon as 3 today. So whether the Ravid literally means 3, or the Ravid means that Avram found HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a child. But again, so interestingly enough, the Beis Halevi says, this seems to be a proof to the Rambam's position, that in fact, Avram Avinu did not find God till 40, which if you notice again, by the way, 40 seems to be a very significant number. Who else finds God at 40? Rabbi Akiva. It's interesting. So just it's a fascinating idea that you could become an Avram Avinu even if you're a late bloomer, right? You can become a Rabbi Akiva even if you don't wake up until the age of 40. It's quite, I'm not encouraging not waking up to the age of 40, but again, it's quite profound that so often we think that as time goes on, it's too late for us. It's not true. Some of the greatest people throughout our history only got a start while they were well into their younger years. So says the thing something very profound. So what the Haggadah is saying, it's not just a generic statement that our ancestors were idolaters. It's a specific statement. We come from Avram Avinu. And guess what? Avram Avinu was not always Avram Avinu. What was he? For the first 40 years of his life, he was Avram the idolater. That's what he was. And that's who we come from. Now, why make a statement like this? Look at number 12. So I'm sure there's something so beautiful here. The Maggid of Kozhnitz has a beautiful insight. And the Maggid of Kozhnitz writes, Now again, so why say this? You know, first of all, you know, there's a concept, by the way, that the Gemara says two statements. You don't remind the Baal Tshuva of their past life, right? So you tell me, how did that crab taste? Mm-hmm. And how was it? Tell me, it was good, wasn't it, right? Burger King, how was that? You don't remind the ger, you don't remind the convert that, oh, you know what? What is it like, you know, having parents to celebrate Christmas? You know what I mean? There are certain things that you have to do in order to be sensitive to an individual who has adopted a new life. And again, recognizing that it's a struggle. It's a struggle for the Baal Tshuva to lead a new life than he or she led before. It's a struggle for a person to convert and on one hand try to remain connected to their biological family, maintain respect, maintain love, maintain relationship, while at the same time maintaining a lifestyle that is so totally different than the one they had. So therefore, again, out of sensitivity, we don't speak about those things. If the person wants to speak about it to me, that's fine, but I don't bring it up. So why are we bringing up here on the Leila Seder? Avram Avinu, Avram was an idolater, not just a little idolater. He didn't just dabble in idolatry. He wasn't just a recreational idolater. He managed was idolatry 24/7. He was into it. Worship. Why bring this up? So look at number 12. Says the Maggid of Kozhnitz. Perish. Lo yomar ha'adam, because a person should never say, Hoil vahari osi es ma'asai adhina. Aimli od shum takarnalis karvel Hashem Yisparach. A person should never say, I am beyond repair. I'm beyond repair. You know, Rav Soloveitchik writes in his essays on tshuva that the greatest obstacle to tshuva is not the sins that I've committed. The greatest obstacle of tshuva, says the Rav, is what he calls the sinner mentality. What's the sinner mentality? I'm no good. I'm worthless. Why would God want anything to do? I know how damaged I am. I know how handicapped I am. So why would the Ribono Shel Olam want anything to do with me? Says the Rav, we are the greatest obstacle to our own tshuva. So the Maggid of Kozhnitz says, a person should never think I'm beyond salvation. No matter what you did, no matter how egregious or heinous the act, no matter ultimately, again, how much I've soiled myself spiritually, no matter how much I have handicapped my spirituality, my soul, a person should never say I'm beyond salvation. You know what? Sometimes you can't change the past. Sometimes you can't make amends for what has been done. So you know what you do when you can't change your past? You know what you do when ultimately, again, you can't undo what you have done? You just simply resolve to live differently from this day forward. I can't change what's done. I did it. I have to accept the ramifications of it. I have to live with the repercussions of it. But I know one thing I can't do. I can't undo the past, but I still have the ability to write my future. And so says the Magid of Kashis, that's the job of the Jew. V'yomer b'libo. And so a person will say, where do you get the chizuk to do this from? Person should say in his heart, halo mitchila ov de avod zara hayu avosim. A person should always remember, we come from idolaters. In the beginning, again, our nation comes, Avram Avinu was an idolater. And yet, amazingly enough, despite the fact that Avram Avinu was an idolater, and remember again, you can't undo your idolatrous past. The idolatry that you worship. You can't erase that. Yet the same man who was such a rampant and vehement and zealous idol worshiper is the same man who what? Who heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lech Lecha. Is the same man who became the father of our nation. Ve'ein lecha davar sh'omei b'fnei ha'tshuva. Nothing stands in the way of repentance. U'bizchusa nigal Yisrael. So says the Magid of Kashinitz so beautifully. You know what Maschil b'genus u'mesayim v'shevach teaches us? You know what it teaches us? It teaches us that no one is beyond repair. That no one is beyond salvation. That no one is too damaged. What's the proof? Avodim ha'inu l'parim said we were slaves. We were not just slaves. We were, the truth is, we were only a little step above animals. We really had lost any desire to really live. We lost any kind of spirituality. We lost the connection to God. And yet what? We were able to rehabilitate ourselves. Avram Avinu was an idolater. And yet what? He rehabilitated himself and he became the Av Hamungim, the father of a multitude of nations. Says the Beis Halevi, says the Magid of Kashinitz, Maschil Beginus Messiah Meshach reminds us that no matter how damaged I may be, I am never beyond salvation. I am never beyond repair. Again, I might not be able to change the past. I might not be able, because you know, sometimes we are saddled with just the repercussions of our actions. Sometimes we do things, and the truth is, I can't undo them. And I'm saddled with the baggage that's a result of my actions. And I have to live with that, but I could still write my future. Even if the beginning is gnus, even if the beginning is negative, even if the beginning is disparaging, even if the beginning is shameful, I choose how the story ends. And the story ends misayim. The story has the ability to end b'shevach, with praise, with beautiful life accomplishment. So if we bring together what we have so far we have three different approaches in understanding this model of maschil beginus. Remember, trying to understand the framework of the Haggadah. So why do we begin the Haggadah with, again, disparaging, shameful pieces and end off again on a high point with praise? So we have three different approaches. The Marsha and the Taz was for what purpose? Humility. Humility, a person can get a little bit carried away with their newfound freedom, with their new monarchical identity over the course of the Seder. Therefore, again, remembering the low points of our beginnings keeps us humble. The humility keeps the newfound freedom in check and allows for a healthy Seder night experience. Second approach, Rabbi Lau in the Malbim, contrast. Contrast, that sometimes you can only appreciate freedom if you understand servitude. You can only appreciate physical freedom if you learn Avadim Hayinu. You can only appreciate spiritual freedom if you realize we hail from idolaters. You can only appreciate light if ultimately you have a frame of reference of darkness. And to take this a step further, what we said also is that Maschilus B'Sayim B'Shevach, the contrast also teaches us that you have to have patience. The contrast will evolve. Life is a continuum. And sometimes the continuum begins with very difficult times. But as the continuum continues to progress, we begin making our way into Shevach, into wonderful accomplishment, beautiful accomplishment. But you have to have patience. You have to have staying power. You have to be able to hold on while the dynamic continues to unfold. And the third approach, the Beis Halevi, the Magid of Kashinitz, who explained what? That no matter how damaged I may be, no matter how handicapped I may be, no matter how much goodness, no matter how disparaging or shameful my beginning may be, I can't necessarily rewrite the past, but I can absolutely decide how to write the future. Even if the aschol, even if the beginning is shameful and disgraceful, Messiah b'shevach, I can end off ultimately with beautiful praise, with beautiful life accomplishment, which now brings us to our last approach, which Emir Tashem will tie everything together. So this is a beautiful piece by Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. So Rabbi Nachman writes the following. Rabbi Nachman says, Avodah Mayu L'Par Mitzrayim. So Rabbi Nachman is bothered by our same question, the question we began with tonight, which was, Af al pi shemashivim leben avadim hayinu b'chol sipur yitzias Mitzrayim, Af al pi kein bivadai ein ze teretz maspik leva'er uletaritz b'shlemos kol hakushyos shel ma'an ishtano. So Rabbi Nachman asks, Rabbi Nachman's question, going back, which is, it's very nice we start avadim hayinu, but my child asked me the four questions, the Ma'an Ishtana, and I have not answered my child. I've given them a nice paragraph of Avadim Hayinu. It's very beautiful, very nice. Now, again, the good news is the kids are half asleep by then, right? It's already Avadim Hayinu. No, I'm just kidding. But the idea is that the kids are already gearing up for their next question. But if you think about it logically, I'm not answering the question. Kilefi miyut sichlenos. Look what he writes. Rabbi Nachman says, Kilefi miyut sichlenu, adayin kasha kol dikdukeh amizos uprateyem. So Rabbi Nachman says, because if we're honest with ourselves, all of the details of Pesach are quite overwhelming. And the truth is, we don't fully understand them. What does that mean? Mikoshkim Mishraim Os HaShana. Ma Shayachus Lehem Le'inyin Tzias Mitzrayim. V'lama Anum Nichuyovim Davka L'Tabo Shtei Pam Zekh L'Tzias Mitzrayim. So remember, everything we do on the night of the Seder is to somehow amplify and remember the Exodus story. So Rabbi Nachman says, if I were to ask you, so how does dipping two times in any way relate to the Exodus? V'chein, lama chametz asr b'mashu? Why do I have to get rid of every little bit of chametz in my house? Right? What mean? Why is that necessary for a Pesach observance? He says, what? Why? V'im b'shul l'zecher achi pazon. And if you want to tell me it's because, again, the Jews left in such haste that the dough didn't have a chance to rise and remain unleavened. You know what? Again, if the whole idea is to remember the haste with which we left Egypt, then I don't have to get rid of chametz. Leave me alone with all the cleaning. Leave me alone with all the kashering. What will I do? I'm going to eat matzah. And matzah itself reminds me about the haste in which we left Egypt, and that's enough. Leave me alone with the ridiculous clean, the ridiculous kashering, all of the details. He says, "Kimo mitzvah sukkah shuzeicha lehekav anan yakavod avalom neeser habayis legarim b'shvil zeh." Why do I have to get rid of all the chametz from the house to remember the Exodus? It's actually very validating, right? Yeah. He says, "Ubederach arai mutra lekanis bo v'lama hachametz asu legarim mashu bayrabayim matzei." Not only that, remember the strictures that regulate chametz are so intense, you can't see. Not only can you not eat it, but you can't see it, you can't own it, you can't possess it. V'chein b'shar prati hamitzos, bevadai eim anu mevinin ta'ameim. Uma inyon yitzias rayim l'mitzah, sitzis v'chein b'shar mitzos. So Rabbi Nachman asks in general, the problem we reach is that we don't really understand the obligations we have on Pesach, not just the Leil HaSeder. You know, again, if you think about it, if the whole idea is to remember the Exodus, and my idea is to remember the haste with which we left Mitzrayim. Good, I'll sit down, I'll have a nice meal. We could have matzah instead of challah. That's fine, we'll do the matzah. But why so intense with all the strictures, with all the details, with all the prohibitions? And what about all the things that the truth is, when the kids ask these questions, right? The adults are getting a little bit nervous because I don't know the answer to this. Why do we dip twice? I mean, we're sorry to get the kids to ask, but is that really an answer? There's got to be some deeper sin. Why do we do these things, says Rabbi Nachman? Look what he writes, paragraph B. Rak be'emes, yesh shayachos gadol inyon tzias Mitzrayim l'chol ha-Torah kula, ol chol ha-mitzvos u'prateyem, aval anu ein mevinim kol zos b'pratios. And the answer is, Rabbi Nachman, is, you know what the answer is? We don't really know. Why does God want me to go ahead and spend so much time kashering my kitchen, cleaning out my cabinets, getting rid of all the chametz, vacuuming here, vacuuming there? Why does God want me to do that? And how does that tie into the Exodus? I'm not exactly sure. But look what Rabbi Nachman says in letter C. Aval be'emes ze ikar ha'tikun. But says Rabbi Nachman, that's exactly the point. Shemodin lo shekol ha'shinuyim shebalayla hazos v'chol ha'torah v'ha'mitzvah. Hakol b'shvil la'hamshich aleinu ha'emuna ha'kidosha shegilu lono b'rachama b'yitzias Mitzrayim. You know what the whole goal of a Pesach experience is? The whole goal is to cultivate a sense of emunah. is to cultivate a sense of belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, this is an often overlooked part of the Exodus experience. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us in the words of the Navi, that Zacharti lach chesed ne'urayich. I remember the chesed, the kindness of your youth. God is talking to us, Klal Yisrael. I remember the kindness that you, the Jewish people, did for me in your youth. Lech abas kulasayich. I remember the love of our betrothal. Lech teich acharai b'midbar. Be'eretz lo zeruah, that you followed me. God says to us, you followed me into the desert, into a land that was uninhabited. You know, we often forget about this piece. You know, 3.5 million people left Egypt with a little bit of matzah, because how much provisions can you take with you? A little bit of matzah. And they wandered into the desert. Now, if somebody were to ask you, is that a good idea, you would say, of course not. How do you want, you have your children, your family with you, your friends with you, your people you're responsible for, and you wander into the desert with nothing? That was the greatest event. The great event of the Exodus was not that God took us out of Egypt, because God can do whatever he wants. He's God. The fact that the Ribono Shelom beat a human king by the name of Paro, obviously God can do that. That he brought 10 plagues, of course he can do that. That he split the sea, of course he can do that. Says Rabbi Nachman, you know what the truly amazing part of the Exodus was? That we followed God out, which ultimately is the greatest display of belief. Now, if you ask the common Jew, why are you following God out? What would he have told you? You conducted, right? The reporters are there. They're asking, right? People as they're going out of Egypt. No, what are you thinking now that you're leaving? What would they say? Right? I have no idea why I'm doing this, to be quite honest. You know, maybe somebody's asked, that guy's doing it, so I'm going and following him. But the idea is that they would say is, the truth is, I can't even tell you why I'm doing it. I'm not even sure it's actually a good idea. Very nice. So you try taking a trip with no provisions for your family, because God says, we don't get on the New Jersey Turnpike, you know, without 50 bags of snacks and drinks and everything else, you know, and that's, so, yeah, okay, they know they're going to territory. So all these things are very wonderful. But at the end of the day, to leave Egypt with not enough food, they didn't have enough to pack up, they just took the matzah they had left over, to wander into the desert where there's no water, there's no provisions, there's no realistic way that you could sustain yourself in these circumstances, is pure emunah, pure belief. And says Rabbi Nachman, that is really the goal of the Seder night, is to try to once again develop within ourselves this sense of pure, beautiful, unadulterated belief. You know, we've spoken about this before, that sometimes our greatest handicap is that we're too intellectual, is that we think too much, because sometimes it's that intellect that gets in the way of just a pure belief. You know, I remember when I was a young child, I used to learn with my grandfather, Zichrono Lebracha, during the summers. And very often when I would ask him a question, he was a European Jew, I'd ask, you know, Zaidi, why does it say this? Or why you teach a halacha? Why is that? And his answer would always be the same. His answer would always be, state in the Torah. That's what it says in the Torah. And when I was a kid, I used to think that maybe he didn't know the answer. That's why he was saying that. But then as I got older, I realized he knew the answer. But he was trying to teach me that at the end of the day, it's all about belief. You know, people can give you all the answers you want. They can give you all the interesting ideas. But at the end of the day, being a Jew is all about emunah. It's all about belief. And belief is not intellectual. Belief is not rational. Belief often doesn't make sense. It's just a feeling you have in your heart, you have in your soul, that you know is right. It's that belief that propelled our ancestors to leave Egypt 3,000 years ago. Says Rabbi Nachman, our goal over the Leil HaSeder is what? Is to once again try to blanket ourselves with that same belief. Look what Rabbi Nachman says. He says, "Aydei ha'osos v'amosim hanoraim sha'asim hanu adin cheker, sha'al yidei zeh ra'inu ayin ba'ayin kirayis." Look what Rabbi Nachman says. So this is amazing. So back to Rabbi Nachman's question. So my child asks, "Ma'nishtana halayla hazeh?" Asks me all the four questions. And what do I do? You see, here's the issue. I could do one of two things. I could go through, well, you want to know I only eat matzah? A, B, C, D, and E. You want to know how you dip twice? A, B, C. Why you recline? I can give you all the answers. But instead, we don't do that. Instead, what do we do? Avotim ha'inu l'paru mitzrayim, v'yotzi'enu Hashem Elokeinu misham. You know, my child, the reason we do everything tonight is because the Ribono Shel Olam took us out of Egypt. Because we followed him. Because we believe. That's why we do it. Says Rabbi Nachman, avotim ha'inu is the answer. We do what we do in our Yiddishkeit, in our Judaism, because we believe. Because we have a profound emunah. Yes, we try to bolster that emunah by understanding things as well. But it's not the understanding that could be the catalyst to action. Why? Why? Because understanding will always fall short. It's always going to fall short. You're never going to fully understand the will of God. You're never going to fully understand the mitzvos. So understanding is helpful. But at the end of the day, the primary catalyst that pushes me to serve the Ribono Shel Olam is simply emunah. So when my child asks all of these wonderful questions, on this night I say to my child, understand my child, tonight is not about the intellect. Tonight is not about explaining to you the four different opinions as to why we eat karpas, or the four different opinions as to why we go ahead and we recline, or why we dip twice, or why only matzah. Why? That's not tonight. Tonight is avodim hayinu, we were slaves, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out, and when God opened those gates, we walked. Not because God forced us to, not even because God commanded us to, but of our own free will. We were so inspired with our newfound belief that we left. That's the answer to the question. You want to know, my child, why I do all of these things? Because I believe. Because I have emunah. And now if we bring this all together, what comes out perhaps is something very beautiful. So now, first of all, we understand the answer to our original question. That although it looks like that Avadim Hayinu is not an answer to Manashtana, in fact, not only is it an answer, but it's perhaps the most profound answer. The most profound answer is, I do what I do because I believe. You know, it's not easy to always make that statement, but on the Leil HaSeder, that's our goal, to really instill within ourselves, to once again reinvigorate that feeling that our ancestors had 3,000 years ago, of just a full, beautiful, almost childlike belief in the Ribono Shel Olam, that He's going to take care of me. He's my Father. He loves me, and He's going to look after me. But perhaps we could include all this together. Perhaps if we take the previous three opinions of Maschil, Beginus, Messiah, and Beshevach, so now perhaps what really comes out over here is a real definition of Emunah. Because remember, again, we had three different opinions as to why the Haggadah follows this framework. And maybe we could suggest that the whole idea of Maschil, Beginus, Messiah, and Beshevach is really there. What? Why do we begin with the disparaging part and ultimately, again, end on the high part? Perhaps the whole goal of the Seder, as Rabbi Nachman said, is to create a sense of Emunah. And Maschil, Beginus, Messiah, and Beshevach, this idea of starting with the low parts and ending on the high parts, that helps us with Emunah. Why? Because perhaps Emunah is comprised of the three things. Number one, in order to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the first thing you have to have is what? A sense of humility. Like we saw in the approach of the Marsha. You can't believe in God without humility. Because again, if I'm not humble, then I don't need God. If I'm not humble, then I'm not dependent. So the first thing I need in order to have a full sense of emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is I have to have a sense of humility. Number two, I have to have patience. Emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu requires an incredible, almost a divine amount of patience. Because life plays out. Our questions do get answered. Our situations do get resolved. Not always in the way we like them, but there is always resolution. The difference just is you have to have patience. You have to have staying power. To have emunah, you have to have patience and allow the Ribono Shel Olam to do what He has to do. And number three, in order to believe in God, there's a prerequisite to believing in God, and that is believing in yourself. You can't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu if you don't believe in yourself. Because belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of me. Belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that God is always watching over me. Belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that God is involved in my life. But if I don't feel that I could accomplish something great, if I don't feel that I could turn my life around, even if I have not maximized it until now, then why should the Ribono Shel Olam, why should God involve Himself in my existence? If I don't believe in myself, then how could I possibly believe that God believes in me? So perhaps when we bring this all together, what comes out is something truly profound. That when Chazal said that the format of the Seder is Maschil Beginus U'Mesayim B'Shevach, we begin with the lowful, the low, shameful, degrading parts of our existence. Remember, Machlokes Rav and Shmuel as to what that is. Is that the spiritual, the physical low? And over the course of the city, we work ourselves up to the point that now we're physically free. Now we're spiritually free. Perhaps this is all part of a greater process, which is the goal of once again reaching the level of Emunah that our ancestors had. And you know, maybe we'll be able to hold on to it throughout the year, maybe not, but at least for one night, we try to once again climb that ladder and reestablish for ourselves that sense of emunah. And how do we establish a sense of emunah? Again, number one, humility. Number two, patience. Number three, belief in one's self. Once I've established that sense of emunah for myself, then when my child asks me his or her questions, I have the ability to answer them, "My dear child, I have spent this night trying to inculcate within myself a sense of emunah, and it's that sense of emunah that I want so badly, so desperately to pass on to you as well." So Miratz Hashem, as we have our Seder, and we all have our Siddur with our different customs, with our different songs, with our different insights, perhaps again we try as a greater goal over the course of the Seder is to establish a greater sense of emunah. That there's a place for the intellect, there's a place for intellectual pursuits, there's a place for reasons, there's a place for logic, but perhaps that place is not at the Seder table. Perhaps our goal ultimately, maschil beginus umesayim b'shevach. We start in the low part of our existence, national and personal. We work our way up, but at the end of the day, the ultimate goal is to feel like our forefathers felt. Lechtech achrei b'midbar. They had the emunah, they had the full trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that they just need to follow God, and some way, somehow, everything will work out. Let us hope that Amirat Hashem, over the course of the Seder, we will be zocha to reach that same level of emunah as well. All right, let's stop over here. Shabbos afternoon shir. Oh, and Wednesday night, also just want to announce it. Wednesday night, there is a special shir 8:15 here in the shul. It's actually going to be in the shul, sponsored by the Star K, all about the halachos of Pesach concerning Pesach products. So again, that'll be 8:15 here in the shul.
Thank you very much. Wonderful. Thank you.
There's usually not time. You got to publish this.